And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, solid conservative and just plain right, saving the world one soundbite at a time, at least when the power doesn't go out. And anyway, thanks to all of you who are texting in, letting us know that you couldn't hear us or that we were going on and off. And I appreciate it. We got the systems back up and booted, I do believe, and General Arbuckle is back on the line. So let me go straight to the phones. Major General Joe Arbuckle. Hey, sir, thanks for hanging on. Apologize for the communications gap on our end.
Hey, no problem, Phil. I told Boomer you guys need to pay your electric bill.
Yeah, okay. Let me jump back in where we were talking a moment ago. This madness we've got going on right now in Russia, which is still unfolding. I mean, nobody knows where this thing ends. But give me your thoughts, if you don't mind, from somebody who's had to plan at the strategic level. What do you think's going on with regards to the fact that this is a nuclear nation where this unrest is taking place? Not just, you know, the level of ops that we may have to plan for, you know, proposed armed conflict, but what about securing nuclear facilities?
Well, that certainly ups the ante to the maximum level, of course, Phil. Nobody wants to see, number one, a nuclear, attached nuclear weapon used on the battlefield. And so this has got to be handled at the top level diplomatically. Between our country, Putin, and all the NATO allies involved, and anybody else we can bring into these discussions to find out exactly what's going on with the nukes, where they're at, and if they are secure. What my major current concern is, we heard a few weeks ago that Russia was going to move some of its tactical nuclear weapons back into Belarus in the form of rockets. And Lushenko basically said that yesterday or today. He said he's got the first shipment. He didn't say where they're at, but he did indicate there's more coming. Now, that has not been confirmed, but that's what he said. So that's a major issue that needs to be worked. We've got to get control of where those are at. And the answer from our standpoint, in my view, is not militarily. It's got to be diplomatically.
Well, I would agree with that, sir. And the question then becomes, you know, is our current, you know, diplomatic, our foreign policy staffing, you know, up to speed and able to get it done? But let me ask you this, sir, with about a minute and a half left. I mean, there's a lot of questions about whether we even have an end game in sight with the war in Ukraine. And what, you know, of course, this whole situation seems to have been a shot in the arm for the Ukrainians. But what are your thoughts on that as we wind up our time here today?
Real quickly, from the top level down, number one, this war should have never happened. The roots of it are traced back to our debacle in Afghanistan, where we cut and run, basically. And that sent a signal, as we said in a couple of letters to our allies and also to our adversaries across the world, we can't be trusted. And so it could have been avoided. That's number one. Number two, I have never heard a clear statement of the U.S. strategy regarding our involvement in Ukraine. All I hear is that we're going to give the Ukrainians everything they need to prosecute the war. Well, that's not a strategy. That's a course of action. Hmm. And again, as you said, no one has defined what the end state is. In order to have a strategy, you have to have a strategic objective in mind. And once that's accomplished, then you've met your strategy. Well, I've not heard that other than to continue the fight, which means you're into a war of attrition. There's not going to be any winners in this, Ukraine or Russia. The one that's going to come out on top is the one that suffers the least losses, in my opinion. And that's not the way to fight a war, prosecute a war.
No, sir, it's not, proxy or otherwise.
Right.
Well, sir, I really appreciate your time, and I thank you for your patience. I mean, this is an unusual situation with having our power outage, but Major General Joe Arbuckle, we thank you for your input, and we look forward to having you on again sometime soon.
Always a pleasure, Phil. Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir. That was retired Major General Joe Arbuckle, who 10 years of his 32-year career were spent in strategic planning. I thought it'd be good to get the commentary of someone else who has sort of got a perspective on where we stand with what's going on in Russian roulette right now. All right, listen, we're going to shift gears. Coming up, Todd Stacey from the Alabama Daily News. We're going to be talking about what's next with drawing new congressional lines in Alabama. Y'all stay tuned. We'll be right back. Hey, all you right side ruffians out there, you are listening to Right Side Radio, solid conservative, just plain right. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, solid conservative, just plain right, covering down on some major ground across the northern half of the most beautiful state in the nation. That would be this one. That would be Alabama. I'm talking about this show sends its signal way on down south of Birmingham and up north of Huntsville, Tuscaloosa, back to Gadsden, parts of Georgia, Tennessee, and Mississippi, thrown in just for good measure. All right, we're in number two of the Triple Dipper starting right now. So I'm calling this section Reading Between the Lines. We got to draw some new congressional lines. The courts have ruled. We have a special session looming. And just yesterday, a friend of mine, Todd Stacey, is a publisher for Alabama Daily News. He's also the host of Alabama Public Television's Capital Journal. And, oh, by the way, he used to be the communications director for Congresswoman Martha Roby. I thought with all of that in mind, he might have a perspective. And sure enough, he also just published yesterday the maps that are being proposed by the plaintiffs who prevailed in that most recent Supreme Court case. So let me stop talking and get him on here. Todd Stacey, how are you doing, my friend?
I'm doing good. How are you doing, Phil?
I'm good, man. Thank you. Hey, listen, let me before we even get into the news side of things, let me ask you, did you work with Congresswoman Roby back when the last redistricting took place in like 2010, 2011?
No. So I actually happened to be in the legislature then.
Oh, that's right.
I was working in the speaker's office, and I did work on the issue because it happened in 2011. You know, we do this every 10 years after a census. And so this is going to be my third time, because back in 2001, I was an intern in the state Senate, just sort of observing all these maps come through and, you know, as a kid, basically.
Yeah.
But yeah, 2011, I was in the legislature as staff. And of course, now reporting on it. And the one thing you can always count on is there's just going to be a lot of disagreement. But one thing that I'm glad you brought up is the delegation itself, in all those cases, including this most current one, the delegation itself really does play a big role in asking the legislature what it wants, how they want their districts to look.
Yeah.
And this time around, they got everything they wanted, to include Congresswoman Sewell. I mean, that's just what I'm told, but obviously the courts felt differently.
Well, and I look at it, you know, speaking of Congresswoman Sewell, so she's been sort of, you know, out there crowing about this is going to be a wonderful thing, how great it is that the court ruled that we have to redraw the lines to create what they are referring to as two majority black districts. But the assumption on her part is that she'll still win back her current district and that Democrats would win that second new district. What are your thoughts on that? Is she going to be weaker or not?
Well, I think she is politically strong enough and popular enough that she would probably be fine almost no matter what. You'd probably have to, you know, drastically change her district to really include a lot of new territory. But she's probably going to be fine. But if that district does change to where you significantly reduce the black population to shift them elsewhere, and then whenever she retires, then that the next time around, that's going to be a potentially a competitive seat for Republicans. So she's fine in the immediate future, I think. But you're right. I mean, look, that the current 7th district is drawn to be exactly what she needs to get elected, and it's only gotten, you know, better over time. And so, yeah, I mean, those of us who kind of work behind the scenes and have worked behind the scenes and know sort of what the real joke is, it is a little bit interesting to hear her talk about that, knowing that she got exactly the district she wanted.
Well, yeah, and not only that, but like you said, all the rest of them were pretty pleased with the layout of their district lines. And they all got a chance to not have to worry about it this last time around, but it looks like everybody's going to have something new. Because once you start drawing one line different, it has a domino effect on all the others. There's no way around it.
Absolutely, and I'm glad you mentioned that we published it. It's still at the very top of the website, at Alabama Daily News, at aldailynews.com. You can go look at, there's four maps. One is the map that the plaintiffs have submitted. That means, you know, Evan Milliken, who's the lead plaintiff, but also ACLU, NAACP, and others that sort of joined into that lawsuit. They obviously prevailed in the lawsuit, and so they've got this map of what they would like to happen. It does create two majority black districts, the 7th, but also bringing the 2nd district to just above 50% black. And so that would obviously be very significant. It also changes the 2nd and the 1st down south to be really very different than they are now. But also, Sabine, and this is what's really interesting, are three other maps submitted by State Senator Bobby Singleton, the minority leader for the state Senate, the head Democrat. And they're very different than what the plaintiffs are submitting. They do not contain two majority black districts. They really don't contain any majority black districts, but you get up to, you know, 46-47% black in some cases. So that means probably very competitive between Republicans and Democrats, but they're also just geographically very different, and maybe I would say more like the current maps.
Well, you know, it's funny you say that, because, like, for instance, I live in Etowah County, right, in the Gadsden area, and I've said multiple times on this show that where I live in South Etowah County is on the cusp of the third, the 4th, but on the cusp of the 3rd. I mean, I can throw a rock to the 3rd district from where I am, and then very close, really, to the current lines for the 6th district with Gary Palmer. So if they redraw them at all, I could wind up, me personally, being in a different district. Well, all three of Singleton's plans move Etowah, which is Robert Adderholt's most populous county, out of his district altogether and put it in the 3rd. So, you know, for those who pay attention and kind of know the lay of their land, so to speak, Singleton's plans have a dynamic effect, it seems, more in the middle to north. But you're right. The plan put together by the plaintiffs who won that case before the Supreme Court, I mean, they're redrawing Congressman Barry Moore and Congressman Jerry Carl in the 1st and 2nd districts down in the lower part of the state.
Yeah, and that's the one thing the delegation doesn't want, is for two members to have to run against each other. I would say in the case of the plaintiffs actually getting their way, which I'm not sure they'll get exactly what they want. But yeah, if you saw a situation where, you know, Barry Moore in Coffee County had to run against Jerry Carl in Mobile County, those are two are in the same district, you know, it probably wouldn't matter that. I mean, well, let me put this a different way. If Barry Moore's district ends up being anything like the majority black district that the plaintiffs put forward, it's probably not going to matter who his Republican opponents are. That district's going Democratic, as long as there's a decent candidate. And so so it helped, you know, maybe he doesn't want to be in Jerry Carl's district to run against each other, but it's all honestly probably the best chance he has of staying in Congress. So it's a bit of a double-edged sword.
That's interesting you say that. Wow, because I was thinking, you know, how rough that would be for two members of the same delegation to have to run against each other. But you're saying that you think that the plan put forward by the plaintiffs is the best chance that Barry Moore has of staying in. There's a whole dynamic. We could spend a whole segment just talking about the dynamics of Mobile versus the rest of that district. But
I think Mobile is probably more populous, especially Baldwin. But I'm just saying that my better point is, if the 2nd district is brought up to being majority black, it's not going to matter who the Republican candidate is.
Well, so let me ask you this. What are you hearing from the state legislature? I mean, I know they've got a special session brewing. I've not seen a call yet, but we do have a date or a schedule of preceding events. What are you hearing about a special? Are they going to cram it in and get it in on time? Are they already working the maps? What are your thoughts and what do you hear?
Yeah, so there's a hearing tomorrow. The first public hearing is tomorrow at 1:30 in the State House. That's going to be in room 200 of the State House. It's kind of the big auditorium. It's also going to be live streamed. So if you go to the legislature's website, you can find a live stream if you want to do this. But this is the first public hearing. These maps, I'm sure, will be presented, probably some other ones. They'll probably run through sort of the basics of how this is going to work. But we've not heard a call. The courts, the three-judge panel has asked, and Alabama has agreed. I mean, this was a suggestion from the Attorney General that we'd be given until July 21st to pass new maps. That means the latest the governor could call the special session would be July 17th. You know, maybe they might need some more time, so she could call it earlier, but you're looking in that time frame. But in terms of what we're hearing, not a lot, because they're all being very tight-lipped, wisely so. I get it. I mean, you know, we're the guys in the media trying to get people to come on our shows and tell us what's going on. But this time, ever since this court ruling, they've been very, you know, tight-lipped. I think nobody wants to risk getting out of, you know, over their skis and saying something that may end up, you know, costing them in court. So we'll see. You know, the easy way out is just to pass what the plaintiffs have proposed here, because you know they're not going to challenge it in court, and so you know the court's probably going to be okay with it. But it all but guarantees, you know, one, you know, basically two Democratic seats. These other maps might be tempting for Republicans because, you know, if you have anywhere from that 45% black, that's not exactly a guarantee. That makes it competitive. And plus, these maps geographically are interesting because at least the first one keeps all counties together, right? Like county lines are all preserved in congressional lines. I think that's appealing to a lot of people. So we'll see. But, I know they don't want to pass a map and get cute with it and then go back to court and have them overturn it again. So that's sort of the game we're playing here.
So let me ask you this last question before we wind up our time here. But there's almost like a given, an assumption by Democrats that blacks vote Democrat, and by and large we know they do. Polling will show that as a general rule, you can expect the majority of black voters to vote Democrat. But we've begun to see more and more trends away from that just in recent years. Does that have any effect at all on the Democrats' chances of gaining two seats by the fact that we have now seen more and more black voters expressing conservative interests?
It does, and I think there's a couple of things here. One is it's not just – because you're right, it's about 90%. It's 90% of black voters vote for black candidates. But it's one thing is whether or not they vote. In recent elections, really the last couple of cycles, you've seen poor turnout from black Democrats to support either statewide candidates or it doesn't matter, just because they haven't had a lot of great candidates running. And so, you know, when Barack Obama stopped being on the ballot, you saw turnout really go down amongst black voters. And so that's something right there. If you're not just turning out in the proper numbers, the other thing is candidates. I think if you're a Republican and you want to win in these more moderate districts, higher black population districts, you're going to have to appeal better. The same old way of campaigning probably isn't going to work. I think you're right. I think a lot more black voters are open to conservative ideas. But probably it takes a different type of candidate, a different type of message to appeal to those voters than it is just your run-of-the-mill white Republicans that they're so used to only having to appeal to those. So the candidates are going to really have to play a different game and try to appeal to a different constituency. And that's a big challenge.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. Well, listen, Todd Stacey, we got to leave it there, man, but I really appreciate your time. The maps, I've got them printed out from your website right here. Before we go, if you want to tell folks again where to find you, go right ahead.
Absolutely. Yeah, like you said, Alabama Daily News. It's online at aldailynews.com. You can sign up for our newsletter there. It's very helpful. But also Capital Journal on Alabama Public Television. It's the state's premier television government politics talk show. It's weekly out of session. That's Friday nights at 7:30 and Sundays at noon on Alabama Public Television.
All right, Todd Stacey, appreciate you, man. We'll have you on again sometime soon and keep tabs of all this, all right?
All right, thanks, Phil.
All right, thank you. All right, Boomer, take us to the break, man. I ran long on purpose, but there's just so much content there. Y'all, listen, who's your congressman? It makes a difference. Like right now, Adderholt has had 4th Congressional District lay of the land for a decade, and they're talking about changing that completely. And then down south, you may have our most conservative member of Congress, Barry Moore, Freedom Caucus guy, running against the guy who campaigned against the Freedom Caucus when he ran, Jerry Carl. Oh, my gosh. All right, we'll talk about it more in a minute. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. We'll be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid and conservative and just plain right. Making common sense a superpower. All right, so the text lines are back up, by the way. 833-687-4448. That's 833-68-RIGHT. I'm going to go jump on some of those here in just a minute because we have not had a chance to do that for a while. Especially with, I appreciate all of y'all, by the way, who texted in to make sure you knew that you couldn't hear us, because we knew it here too when the power went out. I tell you what's funny, Boomer. I'm of the mind that nothing's wrong with your back. I saw you leap out of your chair and start hitting buttons.
I leaped out quick.
Yeah, like a superhero over there. Just anyway, and what the heck, man? I mean, not that I didn't want it to come right back on, but power just drops, comes back. It's like somebody flipped a switch somewhere and then turned it right back on. Anyway, we're up. We're running. Let's see. We got some text messages here. What can I say? We have talked so far about number one of the Triple Dipper, Russian Roulette, the craziness that's happening. And we still got to watch it. I mean, right now, Senator Mark Warner, Senate Intelligence Committee, is on Fox as I'm looking over at the screen talking about what he calls the current turmoil in Russia. It's we're not done with that yet, by the way. There's no way we're done with that. Allie from Athens texted in about that issue and said, is this Crown Prince Ferdinand in World War I? I mean, you got to look at it and go, what does it take? What's the spark? Because wars don't always start because of a premeditated, you know, deep strategic planned out operation. Sometimes they are reactionary. Sometimes they are things that are flashes that create what they call a flashpoint. Anita from South Huntsville, Boomer, don't look to Prigozhin as an example for how to approach your boss for a raise.
You're right.
Pretty sure Prigozhin has stepped back, recognizing he has no career left in Russia and is hiring a soup tester. Stephen from Madison texted in and said, how big you reckon the check was to make them turn around? I don't know, man. I wondered the same thing, bro. Did he get bought off? Then again, was Lukashenko bought off? I don't know. George from Huntsville, our power went out, and George from Huntsville says, oh, darn, the Fed shut off your signal. Let's hope not. Michelle from Ohatchee also giving us a heads up. Thank you, Michelle. Brian from Huntsville, oh, great, local radio went dead. I thought that combat column went to Gadsden instead of Huntsville. No. The Wagner Group does not care about what we're doing here. Jeff from Holly Pond making us aware. Thank you very much, sir. Alan from ARAB making us aware. John from Huntsville. So, Phil, who do I need to blame for the technical difficulties? Somebody Democrat, I'm sure. That's all I can say there. And then Andrew from Tony, Alabama, talking about that redistricting thing we had on a minute ago. He said, Alabama's so racist that our government finds it difficult to gerrymander district lines because the people are so mixed together and not segregated. I don't know, man. All I know is we were told you couldn't do it on racist issues, and then we were told you weren't racist enough. We need more race. It's amazing. All right, coming back up, we're going to do a little bit more on this reading between the lines, getting a grip on where we're headed. Can Republicans hold the line and maintain at least 6, who knows, maybe 7 seats? Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We'll be right back. Right Side Ruffians out there, you are listening to Right Side Radio, solid conservative, just plain right.
You're listening live to Right Side Radio with Phil Williams. It's hard to go wrong when you're on the right side. Right Side Radio, solid, conservative, and just plain right.
Alabama's syndicated news talk leader, Right Side Radio, Phil Williams here live in the Right Side Studios. Man, we got the local, the state, the national, even the international, and like the dude just said, solid conservative and just plain right. Hour number three, inexplicably. How do we get to hour three that fast? It's been a great show. We spent the first part of the Triple Dipper talking about what I titled Russian Roulette and the situation going on with the Wagner Group and the dynamics in and around all of that. If you want to text in or call in about it, you're welcome to it, 833-687-4448. And then we also talked about the madness right now, the craziness surrounding the fact that we have to redraw our congressional district lines again. Why? Because we weren't racist enough. No one saw that one really coming, to be honest. I mean, even those who watch the Supreme Court and think they know what it means when one of the justices asks a question a certain way or whatever, you look at it and think, okay, everybody, if you go back and look at the news articles, people really thought that the justices were going to rule in the conservative favor and not make us redraw the lines. Nope. I mean, why did we think that? Because our position was we did all of what we did in a race-neutral way, largely weighed out or played out in terms of the same district lines that have been there for the most part since 1992. There have been nuances. There have been changes, bits and pieces, but nothing wholesale. And yet, we were, you know, the 1965 Voting Rights Act says, well, you know, you cannot just dilute someone's vote. Race can't be the overarching factor. We, as the Department of Justice, have to proof any of your changes to election laws. We have been under the gun since the 60s. And then, wow, we finally come out from under the Voting Rights Act with a Shelby County case that occurred in 2014. And we're like, oh, we can see the light of day. We're allowed to be big people again. We're allowed to act like grown-ups and prove to the world that things are better. And what happens? We use the 10-year census, redraw the lines, and lo and behold, we get sued. Why do we get sued? Because you weren't racist enough. What does that mean? Because they claim that because the state is roughly 20... it's either 24 or 27% black in population, that by that token alone, that we should have a pro rata roughly two congressional districts, because they base the congressional districts on population. And so, wait a minute. Are you telling me that it's not about dividing up the state in terms of its geography in a congressional district by population? Now it has to be population with race being the top consideration. Yes, that's what we're saying. Well, daggum, I wish you'd have said that before we drew the lines last time. But nonetheless, we're going back in. So yeah, the drawing of the lines is going to be a running gun battle for a while. So right now, the plaintiffs in the case, they have presented the map. You heard Todd Stacey a few moments ago talking about it. And it doesn't look too different in North Alabama, I'll be honest. But South Alabama, wow. They take two of our Republican congressmen and they draw them into the same district. So they'll have to run against each other if they want to stay in. Barry Moore and Jerry Carl. Jerry Carl represents out of District 1, out of the Mobile area. And then Barry Moore represents District 2, living in the Coffee County area, over near Geneva, that area, or down, you know, in the Wiregrass region. And we're going to wind up. Anyway, that's one map. Then the other three maps he talked about are from Senator Bobby Singleton, the Democrat minority leader, I'm sorry, in the state Senate. Well, I don't know where his maps came from, because they're all over the place. And I look at it and think, for the love. I mean, this is a wow, complete redo. Like Shelby County. Shelby County, right now, you're in Congressman Palmer's 6th district. You would then be in Congressman Rogers' 3rd district. How about our listeners in Walker County? Walker County, you are mostly in Congressman Adderholt's district, and you may stay there, although part of it may come over to the 6th district. Tuscaloosa County, if y'all are listening down there, you are currently in the, well, what are you in? All these maps have Tuscaloosa either being split up or moved. Right now, I think you're about half and half between the 7th district and the 4th district, but you're looking at all being in the 7th district. I mean, it's just, it's a redo. It's like, if you're a congressman right now, you're staring at it going, I don't even know where to campaign right now. Well, it's going to happen. It's going to happen soon. The Alabama Republican Party, John Wall was on last week. A piece of information came out from him on 1819 News last week. He said the Alabama Republican Party is disappointed in the Supreme Court decision and that the party vows to work hard to win all 7 seats. So one of the weird dynamics, got another story from 1819 here. Congresswoman Terry Sewell is currently our only Democrat in the U.S. delegation. And she is representing an area that is, you know, largely black in population. And she has been crowing about this as being a great day. This is so exciting, she told CNN host Kate Buldan. It's really amazing. I think this time we realize that justice delayed can also mean not justice denied. And so I just think it's really important. This is an amazing story for black Alabama voters. It's for our democracy. It's for the Voting Rights Act. And I've had the great honor of representing Alabama's 7th Congressional District. It's my home district, my hometown of Selma and Birmingham, Montgomery. And she goes on to say, what a great day it is. The question becomes, depending upon what lines they draw, will she still have a strong enough district to get reelected? What if they take and draw hers from a position where she's got something like 60% black vote in her district down to like 51% and draw another truly majority black district, but barely 51%. And then we don't have a good turnout for Democrat black voters. And then what if we see more and more, like we're seeing on the national level, what if we see more and more that black voters are like, Joe Biden, what have you done for me? This economy has crushed my family. Your COVID restrictions crushed my family. Your lack of school choice is crushing my family. What if you begin to see more and more what we are seeing nationally, that black voters begin to move, even if by a percentage or two, move towards Republican voting? And then what happens if we redraw these lines and the margins are thin, but they are approved to have 2 black majority districts, but barely? And let's say Trump wins the nomination and he picks Tim Scott as his VP. Tim Scott, a conservative black man with a strong message who can get out there and campaign. What if that happens and it drives people to the polls to vote for who they believe is a strong black man running for a conservative seat and he picks up a percentage or two of swing voters from the black community? I'm just telling you, there's ways this could break down and you can be optimistic. Then again, we may wind up with a delegation coming up next year that says, oh, look, we have 5 Republicans and 2 Democrats. And it also has an impact on the national majority in Congress. We got to pick up more seats up there. Our margins are so razor thin that we could lose the majority with a couple of strange things like this that we didn't even see coming. All right, there's that. That's number 2 of the Triple Dipper, reading between the lines. Keep your eyes on the ball, y'all, because they're going to be going to a special session coming up here in the next couple of weeks, and they're going to decide who's your congressman, and that's going to decide what do we have in terms of a U.S. delegation. All right, we're going to take a break. We'll come right back. I'm jumping to number 3 on the Triple Dipper, and I'm going to start off by just making you mad. I'm just warning you, get ready. It's like Adventures in Woke World on the ugly side. Y'all stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Come on. Yeah.
And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, solid conservative and just plain right, saving the world one soundbite at a time, making it cool to be a conservative. That you're right. That's my
That's
my favorite. Boomer knows it. He literally said to me right as the bump music come on, he goes, "Here comes your favorite." I was like, "Yeah." Black Crowes, shake your moneymaker. You had a text you were going to read me. What was that a minute ago? You said we get back.
So there was a text from Brandy from Owens Crossroads.
Yeah.
And she brought up a good point. Is there any way to appeal the redistricting?
Oh, you mean like if conservatives don't like it?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's always the Democrats. So
right.
The same thing could actually be done. So here's the way it's going to work. Let's say the lines get drawn, and just for instance, let's say the Alabama Republican Party feels like it has been disenfranchised unfairly in the ability to gain Republican votes. They're going to have some grounds. You can't just say that by party you're going to do it. Here's what I would bet would happen behind the scenes. I bet they would find a plaintiff or three who'd be willing to say, I'm a white voter or I'm a Hispanic voter. And I feel like that the way this has been done has now disenfranchised me, just the opposite of where I was before. And that'll be a real hard push, all right? I'll be honest with you. That'd be an uphill climb because it's not likely that would prevail, because it's not like white people have been the minority and been oppressed and had to go through the Voting Rights Act and, you know, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
So good luck with that. But then you have to look at, are there other technical difficulties? Did they draw the lines unfairly? Are they unbalanced? Did they not meet the right percentages? Have they disenfranchised, I don't know, female voters, Latino voters? Where does it end? I don't know. So to answer your question, Brandy, yes, there is a way to do it. I think the likelihood is that it will not. The real job for us right now is to scrap for, during the legislative process, to scrap for what we believe in is the best, hope for the best, and then see what we get. We'll more to come.
Yeah.
More to come. Hmm. Lots of other text messages. My gosh, what just happened? I tell you what, before I got this segment, though, man, this first story out the gate on this next dipper is going to curl some hair, and I know it. But I'm gonna read some text messages first. What have I got over here? Daryl from Tony, talking about the situation in the Wagner Group in Russia. He says, Colonel, he left a division-sized fighting force without leadership and or direction. What's going to happen with them and the equipment? That's a huge discussion. I agree, Daryl. Said part of that earlier. There's multiple reports. Wall Street Journal has a piece that says that the Russian government has said that those Wagner troops who did not participate, meaning that he didn't take all of them off the battlefield apparently, did not participate in the march to Moscow, will be allowed the opportunity to sign contracts. That's the way they do it. Well, we do too, technically, I guess, enlistment contracts. But over there, you have what are known as conscripts and contracts soldiers. Conscripts are those that are basically drafted in and they have to serve at least, I think it's 2 years. And by the time they finish their training and then, you know, slug it out on the battlefield in Ukraine for a while, they're done. Then there's the contract soldiers, the career ones. Those are the ones who sign on to stay past their two-year obligation. They're offering the opportunity now for thousands of Wagner Group soldiers to basically be able to contract and become careerists. That's a big deal for some of them, because some of them got out of jail to be Wagner soldiers. We'll see. But then the question remains, to your point, Daryl, what happens to the rest of them? We don't know yet. They pulled back from their march on Moscow. They retreated to what they referred to as deployment camps, and we don't know what's going to be the status of those guys yet. But I cannot imagine they're going to be allowed to just melt away into the ranks. Although, you know what? If I was a Wagner guy and I watched Prigozhin, you know, get a special flight out of the country, I'd be saying, somebody loan me some civilian clothes. I need to get out of here. John from Brownsboro. He said, wasn't it a huge fight to strike gender and ethnicity questions from the job applications? When they get their way to equality, they still aren't happy. They just changed their mind. Yes, that is exactly right. Oh, and John just texted, while I'm looking at this, a text message pops in. So to go back to your first question, John, yes, you are correct. We had to remove gender and ethnicity questions from job applications, but we have to add race back into redistricting. It's crazy. He also says, did the rest of the Wagner group head back to Ukraine? Some did. Everyone focuses on the leader's disappearance, but all I've heard was they turned back. Yes, that's correct. Mike from Harvest. Phil, when has our intel community not been surprised by world events in the last 10 years? Sad to say, you are correct, sir. Jenny from Decatur. We have a daughter living in Perry County. She says Terry Sewell has done nothing for them, so she must be taking care of herself. Well, there's that. Don't get caught in the trap, though, Jenny, of saying you have to see their face to know they're working. I used to have people when I was a state senator, and I had four counties. You ain't never been here? I said, I was here yesterday. Well, I didn't see you. What does that mean to me? Just don't get caught up in that trap. I got about a minute and a half, and I see I got a caller on the line. Is that Jeff? Jeff from Indiana. Hey, brother, how you doing?
Doing pretty good, Phil.
Good. What's on your mind, man?
Off work. One thing about, you talk about the Wagner Group marching on Moscow. I think you may be closer than you think. We may have to have our people march on Washington eventually. It becomes that bad.
Let's hope not, but I guarantee you they won't be near as armed as the Wagner Group were. Those guys had a division, man. They were armed up. Armored vehicles, tanks, the whole deal.
Oh, well, I mean, most of our military is conservative, I think, so far. So it may be more military than you think. So, but the thing about it is, on this redistricting stuff.
Yeah.
Are they including in all minorities or just black minority?
Right now, my understanding is the plaintiffs were dealing with it from a black minority standpoint, and I don't know that the Voting Rights Act of 65 did much more than that. It's a great question. I mean, I don't know that we have a huge Hispanic population that you can actually assign geographic areas to. There's little enclaves of, Hispanic majorities, perhaps in a small community here and there, but nothing like Alabama having a 24 or 27% black population overall.
But, yeah, I mean, in the census, they count everyone. So whether you're a legal alien or not, if you put down you're Hispanic and here in the country, they counted you. So, that's what I was wondering about the, you got all this rural, basically a lot of Hispanics in Alabama would be rural farm workers.
Well,
they're gone.
I agree, man. But again, how do you find a way to correlate all that into geographic districts? But hey, brother, my music's playing, man. That means my sermon's about up for this round. Oh, he's gone already? All right. All right, Jeff from Indiana, appreciate you, man. Stay safe on the road. All right, Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. I'm about to make you mad. We'll be right back. Hey, all you Right Side ruffians out there, you are listening to Right Side Radio, solid conservative, just plain right. And we are back, Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, solid conservative and just plain right. I'm talking about we cover some major ground across the northern half of the most beautiful state in the nation. That'd be Alabama. And I mean we send our signal way, way, way on down south of Birmingham and up north of Huntsville and Tuscaloosa back over to Gadsden and parts of Georgia, Tennessee, and even Mississippi thrown in just for good measure. All right, hey, listen, I got to tell you before we go any further, ZLA Solutions, I was talking to them this morning. I say that a lot. It's because they're friends of mine, and they are good at what they do. And the fact that they are friends of mine does not in any way prejudice me. I have seen the examples of their work, y'all. And I mean, when literally, they're out there making a difference in helping businesses get better. That's what they do. They like to say at ZLA, we don't make it. We make it better. That's their mission in life. And they do a lot of things for businesses, but one of the things they do, and they do as their bread and butter, is help with staffing. So if you're looking for folks, ZLA Solutions, they can help you with the recruiting, the background checks, the drug testing. They can find you the one or two hard-to-find type, you know, highly skilled employees, or they can find you a whole shift of workers at entry level. Doesn't matter. It can be in the automotive sector. It can be in service industry. It can be in hospitals. They do all of it. They got all kinds of big-name clients all over North Alabama that they're helping with and really beyond. So check them out. If you need people, they are there to help you. ZLA Solutions at ZLAUSA.com. That's ZLA Solutions at ZLAUSA.com. And do me a favor, tell them you heard about it on Right Side Radio. All right, prepare to get mad. And I don't mean that lightly. I mean, this is one of the stories I saw. The headline alone just ticked me off. And it's folks, listen, there is a sort of a rabid sense out there right now. The liberal progressive left is not just liberal progressive. Sometimes I'm just seeing just flat out evil in what they're doing. Like the next story I'm about to tell you. So I titled this part of the Triple Dipper, I just titled it Madness. And Charlene and I were even talking this morning, is madness a good enough word? And I don't know that it is. She was saying that word doesn't do it justice. And I said, well, you're probably right. What do I call it? Maybe I call it deviance. Maybe I call it, just call it evil. Anyway, madness is still on my sheet, so that's what I'm going with. But the reality is this. This first story kicks off a series of stories that'll just make you mad when you hear about it because you're thinking, but this one's the worst, and I'm going to go first. I could have pulled this from a variety of sources. I just chose Fox News because that's where I saw it the first, but I found it already on Daily Wire, Daily Caller, Red State. They're all carrying it. Here's the headline. New York City drag marchers chant, "We're coming for your children," during the Pride event. I've even done, Boomer, how long has it been? I've done a dipper on this not so long ago where I called it, "They're coming for your children."
Oh, yeah. Was it last week or
it was last week?
Yeah.
I think I called it "Back Off Our Children." That's what it was.
Back Off Our Children.
Mm. Yep. So you saw this headline?
Oh, yes. Infuriating.
Yeah. Madness. And I don't even want to. I mean, I this is not like a jackassery thing. This is sick. So yeah, LGBTQ activists at New York City's annual drag queen parade. Why is there a drag queen parade? Anyway, at New York City's annual drag queen parade, chanted, "We're here. We're queer. We're coming for your children." That was their chant as they marched down the street in drag. We're here. We're queer. We're coming for your children. Now, I will say this. I know for a fact that probably a large swath of what I would just call loosely the gay community does not appreciate this one bit. There's organizations out there called like Gays Against Groomers that are actively saying, shut this down. Stop it. Stop pursuing kids. That is not fair game. But I'm telling you, there's a different level of activity right now. Have you noticed it? You can almost sense it in the air. It's like, I mean, call it spiritual warfare, call it what you want, but the reality is there is a sense right now that there is a heightened level of evil activity designed to go after our kids, designed to change our culture, designed to attack our civil liberties, designed to shut down our voices. And it's getting to the point that it's like they're scratching and clawing to grab everything they can because maybe they realize they've got a limited time frame to work in. We're here. We're queer. We're coming for your children. The group of hundreds of drag queens and other members of the LGBTQ community marched through New York City's Tompkins Square Park. The drag march parade kicked off New York City's Pride Weekend. They got a whole weekend. Pride Weekend, which marks the anniversary of the 1969 Stonewall riots, which was a major moment in success of gay rights. It's not about gay rights anymore. It's not about that at all. The whole notion that this is about gay rights is a farce. At some point in the past, perhaps they marched because they wanted people to know that they were people and they had a right to exist. Okay, I get it. Maybe they wanted people to stop raiding bars to arrest them for being gay. I guess I could see that. This is different. We're here, we're queer, we're coming for your children has nothing to do with gay rights. Nothing at all. This is sickness. Members of the radical LGBTQ Sisters of Perpetual Indulgence could also be seen throughout the Friday event. Let me describe those people to you. They dress up in lampoonish costumes as so-called nuns. They're men in drag, pretending to be Christian nuns, wearing upside-down crucifixes, mocking Christianity, especially Catholicism. Y'all, one of the things that they like to do is pole dance. They do what they call ceremonies. And they like to say things like, "Go ye therefore and sin some more." That's one of their favorite phrases. And then they do pole dances on a cross. This is not normal. This is not only a mental illness, this is a depravity. This is stepping out there and not just saying, "We deserve to have rights too." No, that's not what it's saying. You're saying you want my kids and you're going to get punched in the mouth. You're saying you're going to take my faith and you're going to mock my Lord by doing a naked pole dance with a cross? Tell me why that means anything to do with gay rights. And it doesn't. It's madness. And that's just the first story in the line. God almighty. Oh, bless the Lord. So the end result is this. That story about the boomer, we got the resources up like usual, I guess. So if you want to see these stories, like if you're saying, "Phil, where is that story? I got to find that one. I want to send that to somebody." You can go to our website, rightsideradio.org. Go to the live stream page. And on live stream, you'll see the video, you'll see the audio links. And then you've also got a button that says resources. Every time you hear me rattle the paper to include the one titled "New York City Drag Marchers Chant, We're Coming for Your Children." Every single time you hear me do that, all the links for every story I reference are up there where you can see them. And go read the story. You can find it on any number of sites, but we've got it on ours too, rightsideradio.org. Ronnie from Athens says, "I would love there to be there on Judgment Day when all of them have to go before the Lord." We will be. Badger from Athens. "Sounds like a great declaration of war. Makes them fair game. Come for our kids and find out, man." Kelly from Hamilton says it's called Satan. I would agree. JT from Lacey Springs, "I would consider the chant as a profile assault." Okay. Leanne from Huntsville, "Infinite evil. We as a nation are allowing them to open the wrong door." I agree. There's no reason why that has to be okay. It's not. Anybody who tells you, "Well, they have a right to their freedom of speech," yes, they do. And if they try to act on that speech and come after one of our kids, they're going to get what's coming to them. Teresa from Town Creek, "They are coming for our children. When they stand before God, I want a front row seat," she says. And then Patrick from Grove Oak says, "I'll repeat this about the drag march, a quote from the Reverend Billy Ray Collins, yada, yada, yada. He says, everyone is free to choose to go to hell any way they want." Wow, that's legit. All right. Hey, listen, I'm gonna move to a different story, but take that one for what it's worth. It's real. It's madness. It is absolute madness. And there is, if you see anybody defending that, they can defend it from a free speech standpoint only. There is nothing about saying we're here, we're queer, and we're coming for your children that has anything to do with gay rights. Nothing at all. They're allowed a free speech right. They can say those things out loud. The minute they begin to move towards it, it's game on. Here's one that I find maddening, although nothing like the level of what I just read. So Randy Weingarten, yes, I am changing gears here, but I'm still in madness. Randy Weingarten, there is nobody who has done more to harm education in this nation, perhaps as one single person, than Randy Weingarten. She is the president of the American Federation of Teachers, one of the largest teachers unions in the nation. Under her direction, they fought schools reopening in COVID. They have driven kids into positions of being way behind where they should be educationally. They have done things like help coordinate with the FBI to call out parents who speak at school board meetings as domestic terrorists. They have been in the mix when they have things like, oh, I don't know, CDC Director Rochelle Walensky keeping school restrictions tight. Oh, by the way, coordinating with Randy Weingarten's office in doing so. Randy Weingarten has just been appointed by the Biden administration to join the Homeland Security Academic Partnership Council. There is no way in the world that someone can look at that and go, here's one that won't cause any ripples of discontent. here's one that there ain't nobody going to say nothing about. Tell you what, let's find, a smooth and uncomplicated character and appoint her to a position where we can ask for her advice because she's so well-versed. Nah, screw that. Let's go ahead and find Randy Weingarten and make everybody mad. I mean, even liberals look at this and go, what's she doing up there? What does she bring to the fray? Pray tell, what does she add? Many conservatives were quick to criticize, according to the story here on Daily Wire. Many conservatives quick to criticize the appointment of Weingarten, with Senator Rick Scott saying that she's the last person who should be advising anyone on school safety. Yeah. That's madness right there. Taking the head of the teachers union, who has done more to harm our kids educationally than perhaps anybody else in the nation, and saying, hey, we're going to put her in there with Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas from the Department of Homeland Security and let her advise as a cabinet-appointed position. Awesome. Boomer, what'd you say?
I just said that's so dumb.
It's dumb. It's madness.
It's madness.
It's madness. Take me to a break, man. I got to have my blood pressure got to calm down. I'm going to do some breathing techniques over here in the corner. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Hey, by the way, when we come back, more madness. Because what are they going to do to tax people with electric vehicles? I'll tell you. We'll be right back.
Come on.
And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, solid conservative and just plain right, making common sense a superpower. Hey, by the way, if you hear the ads playing, you know, during the break, you might want to know this. That's how Right Side Radio sustains itself, in part. We are a business unto ourselves, syndicated across the northern half of the state. But the stations that we are playing on don't own us. We own our content. And like any other business, we have to sustain operations. One of the ways we do that, like I said, is advertising. So if you hear this show and you're thinking, man, those guys got it going on. Phil and Boomer in there every day, hashing out the conservative views, talking about things I care about. I want to advertise my business on there. Well, we'd love to talk to you. And the way it works is you don't call the station. You have to call us. So go to our website, rightsideradio.org. That's rightsideradio.org. And you'll find a pass on there, a little tab on there that says advertising and contact. Click on it. Send us a message. We will be in touch. Just signed up a brand new client that we'll have on the air here very shortly, a large chain of medical clinics. Looking forward to getting them in the hopper. But anyway, that's how you do it. Rightsideradio.org. Click on the advertising tab. Send us a message. We'd love to have you on the team. Looking over here at the text messages, like they're just like going boom. Phil, calm down. Just think about the Hunter Biden sweetheart deal and you let your blood pressure go back down, says Chris from Gadsden. That doesn't help me at all. TC from Priceville sends me some pictures. Says, here you go, Phil. Big, beautiful cross is up and looking over North Alabama. Next time you head north, stop by Priceville. I've seen it, brother. I drove past it not long ago. It is gorgeous. I wish it was closer to the interstate, but it's still gorgeous. And was it like 160 feet tall or something like that? I love the one with the sunset behind it, man. That's awesome. Thank you, sir. John from Huntsville. Boomer, since Phil assured me that you are not to blame for the technical difficulties, you get an A-plus for the day. Phil gets a B-plus for making me so mad when I was so happy. Also, while I was listening to Phil's Madness Dipper, I nearly got seriously injured in my junkyard pile, but I'm okay. Hang in there, John. I got more to make you mad. You ready? So here they are. All right. You heard the deal about them, like Boomer. They're pushing us to electric vehicles, right? Like, I mean,
yes, that's all we hear about.
You and I are Jeep guys.
Yes, we are.
And our Jeeps aren't electric.
Nope.
And I don't plan on it.
No, I do not either.
And maybe I have range anxiety. Maybe I don't. Whatever. All I know is they're trying to force us to drive EVs, right?
Right.
Okay. You know how when you buy gas, you pay tax at the pump, right?
Right.
Gas tax then helps pave the roads, build the bridges.
Yep.
What happens when they push everybody to electric and they don't have to stop for gas? Are they still driving on the roads?
They're still driving on the roads. Are they going to charge for the electricity for the tax?
They're going to charge by the mile. This is madness.
What?
I'm showing him the
by
article.
The mile.
Turn your camera on so they can see your face right now. Because
they're going to charge by the mile.
By the mile. I'm holding the article up to the paper.
Wow.
So, up to the camera. Bam, right there. So this story, I pulled this one off of Fox News, but it's out there, man. This is the latest trend. Gas taxes have been used for more than a century for the purpose of maintaining roads. The problem that has developed is taxes are generating less each year due to inflation, fuel efficiency, and the rise of electric cars. States are experimenting with various ideas. One proposal gaining popularity would be to charge drivers by the mile instead of the gallon. Now, let me ask you a question on this.
All right.
Boom shakalaka. How do you propose they find out how many miles you've driven?
Ooh. Are they going to link into your car?
Thank you. Thank you very much. Yes, indeed.
And they're going to ask Sydney.
It's Sydney. The AI.
The AI.
So there's no other way to do it.
No, they would have to link in or when they plug it in, they're going to have some type of link. When they plug it in, it shows the mileage on their car.
Either way, they're monitoring you.
Right.
How far did you go this week? It appears you went 473 and a half miles in the last week. Pray tell, where did you go? That's none of your business. We need to know.
We need to know. That's,
I'm just.
They're just digging into your business.
This is madness.
Yes.
I mean, this is, So this is not just, now we're not just into forcing you towards electric vehicles. It says right here, in 2015, Oregon began a pilot program. Oregon, again. I'm looking at you because your family's from Oregon.
I know, my family's from there.
In 2015, Oregon began a pilot program charging motorists by the distance their vehicle travels rather than the gas it guzzles. To participate, drivers plug a device into their vehicle, and they create an account to capture mileage data. The federal government's about to pilot its own program, funded by $125 million from President Biden's infrastructure measure. So far, only three states, Oregon, Utah, and Virginia, are generating revenue from road usage charges. Hawaii will join them next. Four states, bud. Four states.
No, thank you.
Last year, Colorado began adding a 27-cent tax to any home deliveries from Amazon. That's how they're collecting it.
Man.
This is madness. The idea that I want somebody from the government tapped into my vehicle intentionally, no thank you. I didn't even get into the Pentagon diversity issues or the IRS whistleblower or the fact that Michigan is now criminalizing opinions.
Man, you got a whole thing right there.
We have to do madness 2 days in a row and just make John mad.
Someone said you should do a new segment each Monday, Monday Madness.
Holy cow, we may be on to something. All right, you guys, listen, go home, catch your breath. It'll be good. We need more giant killers in the world. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, Boomer and I back here tomorrow, too. We will see you then. Right Side Ruffians out there, you are listening to Right Side Radio, solid conservative, just plain right.